Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. There is so much to cover, and we're just going to very briefly touch on a few things. I got an email from a pro-lifer in Michigan, and she forwarded me something on the Gonzalez v. Carhart decision written by their legislative director of Right to Life of Michigan, Edward Rivett. And I'll bring this to you in full later in the week, Lord willing. But it starts out like this. The particular line of criticism against the Gonzalez decision coming from certain folks in the pro-life movement like Alan Keyes, Judy Brown, etc., is certainly understandable at one level. And then he goes on to try to explain that there's a different level at which it should not be criticized. So we will look at that and we'll analyze this defense of this wicked ruling from Edward Rivett, legislative director of Right to Life of Michigan. So that'll be interesting. Now, Chief Justice John Roberts was taken to a hospital today in Maine. He was at his summer home. He's 52 years old and he fell. And there's no indication that he's severely injured. Now, the home, his vacation home, didn't he buy that from Steve Thomas? When that happened, wasn't that well known? Steve Thomas, he's the host of that TV show, This Old House. Isn't that that Steve Thomas? Yeah. So I wonder if Steve Thomas sold his house with some kind of inherent flaw, and that's why John Roberts fell at his home, purchased from the owner of that house, who was host of This Old House. I don't know. But you know what happens sometimes when you go to the hospital? You rethink things. You rethink your life, God, what matters. And what matters is often not stare decisis at that time. I'll tell you that. When somebody's in a foxhole, they're getting ready to meet the Lord, they're not thinking, well, I was true to stare decisis. That's not what people think as they're going to the hereafter to meet God. So, and John Roberts, I imagine his injury was minimal from what we could tell from this NBC report here. But let's go to the phones in a moment. Rush Limbaugh has also been reporting on this Michael Vick issue about the outrage. We took a call from Robbie from Little Rock, Arkansas, and he compared Sean Hannity's outrage over Michael Vick and the dogfighting incidents compared to Sean Hannity praising Rudy Giuliani, who supports abortion, all abortion is murder, and even partial birth abortion. That's what Rudy is. He's a partial birth abortion candidate. And so Robbie from Little Rock says, check out Sean Hannity's hypocrisy. He despises Michael Vick because of the brutality toward these dogs, animals, but yet he praises Rudy Giuliani, who is a criminal almost unequaled, for the support of the continued slaughter of children in America, including the obviously, blatantly wicked partial birth abortion. So Rush has picked up on this. Rush probably listens to Robbie from Little Rock's. Does he have a podcast or something? Rush probably tunes into Robbie from Little Rock. And Rush is right on it. And he's saying, you know why people are outraged over this Michael Vick thing? In fact, in Atlanta, they're saying this Michael Vick thing is worse than the Chris Benoit thing. What did he do? All he did was murder his wife and his daughter. That's all. But what Michael Vick did, he's guilty of cruelty toward animals. So people are saying what Michael Vick did is worse. And Rush is saying, you know why they're so twisted? Because of abortion. Abortion, 11 dogs were killed, and we murder 1.3 million unborn children a year. And Rush is pointing that out. And on his website, Rush Limbaugh's website, he has a picture of a dog and a baby in the womb. And he says, look what people are concerned about. So good for you, Rush. Congratulations. All right, we're going to go to the phones And then later in the show, we'll do this story. We point out for 15 years on the air here at Bob and Yurt Live that in our public schools, the girls get sexually harassed. It's systemic. It's just part of the curriculum. They get sexually harassed, even assaulted, and then they graduate and they become the gross national product. And you know what they do then? They go from the public schools to public transportation. And then they harass the women on buses and subways. And there's a survey to that effect, and it's really pretty gross. But let's go to the phones. Actually, we placed this call to Firestone, Colorado. Steve Curtis, welcome back to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hi, Bob. So, Bob, I had an interesting thing happen last week. A few weeks ago, I had received a correspondence on the lifecommercials.com website from a director of a very, very large right-to-life group back in the Midwest. And
all right.
Since I was traveling in the Midwest on business last week, we made arrangements to have dinner on Saturday evening. And it's just amazing how this same thought that's going throughout Colorado here and in the different places where people listen to your show is also permeating different states back in the Midwest. And this guy, like I said, is a director of a large right to life group.
All right.
And said that there's a core group of businessmen and other pro-life activists that have just had it with the way that the right to life groups are very comfortable paying big salaries. In fact, this particular group, he said, was teetering on bankruptcy because their monthly salaries were pushing $40,000 a month, which left, of course, no funds available for anything, including
for actual pro-life projects,
pro-life work.
Right?
Yeah, they were so busy working on legislative things and defending bad laws and bad rulings. And interesting that you started your show that way, because this is exactly the conversation we had at dinner last week. And anyway, he had read your dissertation of Carhartt versus Gonzalez, and I had sent him the 40 Years in the Wilderness DVD, which he informed me he couldn't get back because the person he gave it to had given it to somebody else who had given it to somebody else. And I think the sixth person was now watching the same DVD, so I promised I'd send him some more. But
Steve, thank you for that.
But it's just interesting that the same thing is happening. These people are excited about what's going on out here because for the first time in years, they see a real alternative to just the mindless going through the motions set forth by National Right to Life and so many other groups that are comfortable with, you know, the 4,000 dead babies a year so long as they can collect a paycheck at the end of the month. And a healthy one at that. So we're real excited about getting some things going back there. Our commercials. By the way, can I plug a new website?
Yeah, please do, Steve. I'm right here at
abortionracism.com.
Abortionracism.com. Now, people,
all one word, abortionracism.com.
Now,
and
people,
we just launched that last week.
Just like all of your websites, Steve, this site is extraordinary, visually powerful. The music, you've got, let's list your websites, lifecommercials.com.
Lifecommercials.com, and then there's followingabortion.com.
Mm-hmm. And people should write people should write these down, because each one, when you go to each website, you'll see how startling they are, how powerful, how well done. So, okay, abortionracism.com.
Right, abortionracism.com.
Which just seeing the homepage on that site puts a chill in people, and you realize what's happening. Just seeing it. But
yeah,
okay.
that visual, something we worked on for a few weeks to actually get it exactly the way we wanted it. But it really lays out the problem and the racist roots of abortion. And anyway, and interesting, I'm having a big fight with Google over getting things pointed there, but it is finally up on their search engine. Just today, took a couple of weeks to get them to even let their search engine point to that, which is the biggest fight we've had to date with a website. It's certainly not the most graphic and certainly not obscene at all.
Compared
to what else is on the web, but it's interesting,
course,
where their priorities lie.
Yeah, and of course, you guys link to blackgenocide.org. which is run by the Reverend Clenard Childress back east. And, of course, he's a black reverend who is teaching people that abortion in America comes from Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, and her racism and the desire to get rid of as many blacks as she can get rid of and get away with. So,
well,
yeah, this is all racist.
And it's well documented. I mean, well documented. There are there's another link off of their website, which we link to, so they can very easily find it on abortionracism.com. Mm-hmm. But it was an article that appeared in the Washington Times or the Washington Post back in, I believe it was 2002, that really, really just chronologically lays out the case against the roots of Planned Parenthood
and
the racism.
Steve, there might be liberals who are listening who had never heard these accusations before that Planned Parenthood is racist, but I've read both of Margaret Sanger's books, which this was 15 years ago, Women in the New Race and the Pivot of Civilization, and a number of her early newsletters, and also one history of the birth control movement, which is titled Our Body, Our Life by a feminist historian, like a 500-page book or something. And her racism is extremely well documented, extremely well documented. One of her books, this quote that's coming to mind right now, it's not about racism, but she says this. She says that we should not waste money, federal tax dollars, on the blind, the deaf, the dumb, the lame, and she calls them, she said, these are the dead weight of human waste. So this is Margaret Sanger. Every year, Planned Parenthood gives an award, the Margaret Sanger Award, and this is a wickedly evil woman. In fact, in one of her books, you could get these at the Denver Public Library, for example. One of her books, she says, the most merciful thing that a large family can do to an infant member is to kill it. And she's not talking about abortion. She's talking about after, say, a family has four or five kids, they have another baby. She says the most merciful thing they could do to that baby is kill it because there's too many people in that family. She despised children.
She was a real piece of work.
Yeah.
When you read her quotes and you know when you read her books and you read how she laid out the entire strategy of going into the black communities, you know, her first abortion clinic was in Harlem, New York, and when she laid out that thing about how they were going to go in to those communities and convince the preachers, the black preachers
to go around and sterilize the black women so that she would not be accused of trying to exterminate the black race.
Right.
To that end, she's going to get black ministers to do the work, the PR work.
Well, and interesting that you talked about the Margaret Sanger Award because, you know, Martin Luther King actually was the recipient of that award. I think the year before he was assassinated. Mm-hmm. So interesting that he didn't even get the, you know, for a guy that was such a great orator and
right.
such a figurehead in the civil rights movement, for mm-hmm. him to accept that award is just beyond bizarre, really. Because if Margaret Sanger had her way, Martin Luther King would have never been born.
And Jesse Jackson, in fact, what a great point. Martin Luther King would have not have been born. He would have been aborted. And Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Jesse Jackson, Reverend of what, I'm not sure, but he was against abortion, pointed out the problem of black babies being killed, and then he gets involved in party politics. He's got to be pro-abortion, so he just flip-flopped. And that's happened so many times that a lot of pro-life activists are realizing it is the norm to be lied to by our politicians because we let them get away with it. And that's what the personhood wing of the pro-life movement is not going to put up with any longer. Planned Parenthood has it made with National Right to Life. Because National Right to Life, they're like the wife who wants to be lied to by her husband.
At dinner the other night, this director made the point to me. He said, I was wondering why we hadn't heard more about the opposition to the Supreme Court ruling when they upheld the Carhart versus Gonzalez. He says, once I read the dissertation, he said, I understood why Planned Parenthood was keeping their mouth shut. They actually got exactly what they wanted.
Yeah, yeah, right. This was a benefit to the abortion industry because we cleaned up their act. Planned Parenthood was not happy with partial birth abortion. It made their whole industry look bad. And so because we are foolish and we don't operate based on God's principles of right and wrong, we do things that backfire. So now the abortion industry doesn't have to defend itself against this barbaric act in people's minds. They're cleaned up. They're better off.
Right, right. Well, the other thing coming out of National, and I've heard you talk about this, but he brought this up of his own volition the other night. He said, we're told at Ohio Right to Life, never, ever, ever bring God into this equation because people will tune you out. And I said, you know, there really is no basis for the entire pro-life movement without God. And he says, amen to that. But he says, how few of us actually are willing to get out there and say that. And I said, well, but say it unapologetically.
Wow.
And who cares what somebody thinks about you?
Right.
You know, we're called to be faithful. You know that. You know,
yeah.
We're not called to be successful in
mm-hmm.
this. We believe we will be successful if we're faithful.
Yeah.
But we're not called to be successful. We're called to be faithful.
Amen.
And it's an easy standard to live up to because once you're in that mode of just doing what God wants you to do, you really don't care what other people think about you, and it makes things a lot easier. But we've kind of in the pro-life movement, just like in everything else, you know, we kind of carve out this. It's almost like a theology for ourselves,
mm-hmm.
based on what non-believers tell you that you should be thinking,
right.
And what you end up with is just cutting your own throat.
So, Steve, you have lifecommercials.com, which is where it all began, and
right.
then abortionracism.com, and followingabortion.com, which is so powerful.
Right.
And then
we have supremecourtdecisions.us.
Yes, yeah, supremecourtdecisions.us, and that's where this Gonzalez v. Carhart analysis is that very possibly this Right to Life director you're referring to read the analysis.
That's where he saw it, and that's how he contacted us, because he was stunned. It was completely different than what they were being told, and it was a completely different, or called for a completely different way to approach legislation and the entire abortion problem in America
mm-hmm.
beyond what these large Right to Life groups are doing. You know, they're going right on after Carhart versus Gonzalez. You know, in the pro-life movement, there was no follow-up to partial birth abortion.
Hmm.
All the focus went there, and when it was all over, the question was, what's next? And if you'll notice, at National Right to Life, in the other major pro-life organizations that take that tact, they don't have a plan right now.
Hmm.
They absolutely have no plan. They're going to continue to do the meager and mediocre things that they've done all this time. They're probably gearing up now for the next round of legislation, you know, trying to regulate this and regulate that. And 50 years from now, they'll still be trying to do the same thing.
Yeah,
well, you know,
maybe
there's 100 million kids in this country, both now and in the future, that don't have the time for them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe in 15 years from now, we'll get another 4-inch variation. Says you could only pull the baby out to the hips before you kill it.
And won't that be wonderful?
Yeah, we'll be told by Jay Sekulow that that's a victory because during that 15-year period, maybe he had a year where he took in $11 million.
Well,
so,
exactly.
Hey,
it's a victory for those groups
yeah.
that are paying big salaries to go around and talk about how pure they are because they're sticking to their own theology that they've carved out for themselves
mm-hmm.
regarding abortion. But it's not scriptural, not in our Bible anyway.
Yeah, you don't regulate the murder of the innocent because by doing that, first of all, you destroy personhood in the mind of the public and the judges and the governing officials. But more important than that, you're dishonoring God. You don't regulate rape. You don't regulate child molestation. You don't regulate. I said this to a pro-lifer who's angry at the personhood wing of the pro-life movement. This was yesterday. a pro-lifer who's been active in Denver for 25 years or more. And I said to her, I said, look, we don't regulate murder. I said, would you regulate rape? Would you regulate rape? And she said, possibly. If I was a city council member, I would look at the initiative, and yes, I might regulate rape. And I said, that's because you are, you're off the foundation that God laid out of right and wrong. And you don't understand that ideas have consequences. And when you regulate behavior, you're inherently authorizing that behavior, inherently.
I guess it stands to reason that if we're willing to accept some child murder in this country, why wouldn't we accept something lesser than that, like rape or theft or beating up little old ladies for their Social Security checks or something?
Do you remember?
I mean, really, if you can't get the first thing right, how are you going to get anything else right?
Do you remember the name Bruce Benson?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he was a former chairman of the Colorado State Republican Party. He had that position before you did, right?
Right.
Yeah,
well, he had it one person before the person before me.
Okay, so I went to his office. We had a meeting. There was a manager at IBM, mid-level manager, and I went to meet with Bruce Benson, and we were pointing out how destructive their Republican Party strategy was and how immoral it was. And so I asked him, I said, well, now, what you're saying is that if you were advising Germans on how to vote, that if there was someone running, someone popular who wanted to kill more Jews than Hitler, you would advise them to vote for Hitler. And Bruce Benson said, yes, that's right. If someone's going to kill more Jews than Hitler, I would say vote for Hitler. And I turned to my friend who worked at IBM and I said, his name is Kurt. I said, Kurt, I think we're done here. I mean, you can't get beyond that. This man is admitting that he's immoral, he's wicked, he has no wisdom, and so we might as well go to lunch.
Well, you can't argue with a sick mind. Remember the old Joe Walsh album? Here I am on Bob Enyart Live quoting Joe Walsh, but you know, the old album cover, you can't argue with a sick mind, and maybe it's high time that we just stop trying.
Hmm.
You know, and we just go ahead and do what we know we need to do.
Yeah.
And, well.
And so that's
like
happening, but we are letting more and more people know, Christians, that there is an alternative. There is now the personhood wing of the pro-life movement versus the regulators, the child-killing regulators. And the personhood wing of the pro-life movement is on the ascendancy, and the child-killing regulators are on the defensive.
Well, the more people that understand the distinction between the two, the more the other side will lose. I mean, I can foresee a day in the future where national right to life just won't exist. Mm. And they won't exist because nobody will want them to exist.
Mm.
And, you know, certainly Planned Parenthood would want them. At some point, Planned Parenthood is going to want them to exist
as an adversary,
more than people like you or me. And that day may already be here.
Right. And that's happened historically in the 15 years I've been involved. Planned Parenthood has said things in the public like, well, these pro-lifers here, they're a real threat. They're the real threat to our, you know, survival, and pointing to the personhood kind of pro-lifers. So thank you, Steve Curtis, so much.
Bob, thank you.
Appreciate your time. That's pretty neat. Great update and encouraging to hear about a director of a Midwestern Right to Life group who is sending these 40 Years in the Wilderness DVDs around to more and more Christians to help us wake up the sleeping giant, which is the pro-life movement. It's sleeping because it's been put to sleep. Okay, so our public schools, the girls, don't send your daughters to public school. I mean, don't send your sons either, but it's even more obvious with your daughters because systematically they get sexually harassed. They get asked for sex. I don't know how many times a week that happens on average. Have you seen the surveys? They get made fun of, their bodies, jokes about their bodies. It's all, you know, it's systematic. And so there's an article in Newsday, the New York newspaper, about the Manhattan Borough President, Manhattan, New York City. He wants more police on the subways to fend off the perverts who attack the riders of the subways. His name is Scott Stringer, and they took a poll. It wasn't a scientific poll. It was an online survey, and they found that 60%, they surveyed more than 2,000 New York City people, and they found that more than 60% of those who responded said they were sexually harassed on the subways, and 10% said they'd been sexually assaulted. And rush hour was the worst, perilous, for harassment and attacks. And almost all victims did not report the crime to the police because they thought, what's the sense? And so the president of the Manhattan borough, there are five boroughs in New York City, he said, this is not the police department's fault. This is a culture that has been allowed to fester for generations. Yeah, they've been wallowing in filth. He's absolutely right. They have been. And, yeah, like the Fox News Channel, right? Our public schools that systematically allow the girls in the schools to be sexually harassed. And that's your daughter if you let your daughter go to a public school. Please don't do that. Please get her out of there. So officials with the New York Police Department, they said they're already helping. They noted that they've arrested 119 people for sexual abuse and lewdness this year so far. Not bad, right? Out of about 10,000 perverts, they arrested 119. And the transit spokesman said the agency already has brighter lights on new subway cars. Yeah, that's what we need, brighter lights, because when we have sexual perverts, what we do with them is we register them. How's that? We register them. Now, child rapists? How should we register them? I think we should. We should take a slab of granite and put their name on the slab. Just engrave it right on there. Registered sex offender. And have that registry at some, I don't know, some nice green field somewhere with trees. Okay, hey, we're out of time. Our website is KGOV, KGOV.com. The DVD is 40 Years in the Wilderness. Our catalog, have you seen the new Bob in Your Life catalog? It's just beautiful. And Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a great school.